Michelle, just so everyone listening knows, what kind of efforts do you do to keep yourself looking so sharp, so beautiful, so confident?
Wow, how did that taste coming out of your mouth, Jake?
Gabby scripted it, so.
That's impressive.
I didn't have to think about it.
The information shared in this podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. It should not be considered as professional legal advice or a substitute for seeking professional legal advice. I'm Michelle Locke. And welcome to Love Lust Raw. Love the results when I'm not swollen anymore. It'll be much better. But the pain associated with beauty.
Now, let me ask you this. In terms of threading, when did you decide, okay, this is something that I'm going to trial out? And were you ever warned of the side effects? I guess the pain you're in now. I mean, you can handle pain pretty well. We know this. But what is it about this type of pain that really is excruciating?
So the pain now is not so bad, so it's discomfort. The getting it, like when they actually pull the threads, for those of you who don't know, apparently like the threads are barbed. And so when they pull it, it's, it hurts. wow, it hurt. That being said, did I look it up? No, I didn't look it up. Because what do you do? You don't Google medical advice. You don't Google legal advice. And you sure as heck don't ask ChatGPT. When you lose a bunch of weight, some people get a bunch of loose skin. I have been real fortunate. Even though I've lost 120 pounds, I haven't had a bunch of loose skin. But I was getting like the turkey gobble under my neck. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no. That's got to go. And then you have an amazing facialist. And I have one, Lily. And I saw Lily this week. And so Lily's like, oh, we'll do a thread lift. And I'm like, all right, no big deal. Didn't look it up. Didn't do anything. I trust Lily. And whatever Lily says I need done, I get done because she keeps me looking relatively fresh without looking like I got duck lips. And so we get in there and I numb for like 2 hours. And she starts getting in there for the threading. And I'm like, oh, this is so not fun. But when you're in the middle of it, you're stuck. So I finished it. Love the results when I'm not swollen anymore. It'll be much better. But,
Okay, my first question is, are GLP-1s healthy long-term?
Well, I'm not a doctor. How the heck should I know? But it is my understanding that they've been around for a couple decades. Like, GLP-1s are not new.
Is this the same thing with something like Viagra was a heart medication and then all of a sudden it had this positive side effect for men? Is this the same thing with GLP-1s? They were used for something else and all of a sudden, wait a minute, this could be a really effective weight loss.
My understanding is they were used for diabetes. My understanding is that Medicare is about to approve GLP-1s for Medicare patients because of the added health benefits from them. And Jake wants to jump in.
I have a hot take on this. Michelle, you've compared me to a snail on his last slime before.
I'd love
so
that.
So we know that I'm slow.
It's like molasses.
To adopt certain things, right?
You are.
I do a lot of research. Like I wear contacts and they're completely irritating today. And I still have not considered LASIK because I'm like, well, I know it's been around for 30 years, but let's just see what the side effects are. I'm just telling you, I'm not that extreme when it comes to a lot of things, self-help or betterment or things like that. I believe that regulation is now compromised in many ways in terms of understanding it. I'm not saying it wasn't compromised before, but I think we're in a climate where we're rushing to get certain things out, right? Certain drugs, certain things to make a lot of money. I think it really does depend upon the person. I think you have to talk to your GP, your general practitioner, and really understand if this is healthy for you, not is this healthy for me today, but in 5 years, what could happen? What are the risks?
So I agree that you need to be intelligent about the decisions you make and think about the consequences. But I remember what my blood pressure was and my mental state shortly before I started GLP-1s. And a combination between my doctor and medications saved my life. And so I'm good with it. I mean, it's been life-changing. I mean, I've been on a weight loss journey now since 2021 because losing weight with some underlying health conditions, it was damn near impossible, no matter what I did. And I haven't felt this good with this much energy in years. And they've been around a lot longer than people have really wanted to talk about. And I got to tell you, and this is what really makes me cranky, is people are like, well, you don't know the side effects. Well, I know the side effects of being obese, and that's death. So anything short of that, I'm probably doing okay with it. Like, if it's a choice between me being extremely overweight and all the consequences that come in with being obese or some side effects, I'm going to take the side effects.
What do you think about people using GLP-1s who aren't obese but simply unhappy with, like, their body image? Because it's very easy to get them now.
So, minus mental health issues like anorexia, bulimia, I'm a firm believer in that you do you, so long as your boat doesn't rock mine, and as so long as you're not harming anyone and you're a consenting adult.
And Michelle, we're both old enough to understand this. There was a time at grocery stores where they used to sell something called Dexatrim at the checkout stands.
Oh my God, they would have these little
weight loss drug.
Okay? I remember.
There were other things out there.
God, that was the 80s.
So they had these little appetite suppressant pills that you would take. Then let's cut to like the early 2000s. Anna Nicole Smith is selling Hydroxycut, if you remember that.
I had an incident with Hydroxycut in law school. And I remember taking one, and I was sitting in my legal writing class, and I could feel my heart racing, and I did not feel good at all. And so I put my head down on my desk in my legal writing class. Now, I already had a problem with that professor. That professor didn't like me, and I didn't like her. And so she called me. Ugh. We left class, and y'all, I did not feel good. And so she was at the top of the stairs on the second floor of the law school. I was getting ready to walk out because it was lunchtime. I think I was done for the day. And she starts yelling at me from the top of the thing. Miss Little, come here. I need you in my office now. And I was like, I'm going to lunch now. And I was like, all right. So I went up, and Professor Cheryl Buskey, I'll never forget her as long as I live. I got in her office, and I still felt awful. And she continued to tell me how disrespectful my behavior was in class because I put my head down on the desk. And I told her, I'm like, I didn't feel well. I don't feel well. I didn't go into reasons why, but I just didn't feel well. But man, I got in trouble putting my head down on a desk in law school because I could feel like my heart racing. I never took that shit ever again after that. And that has since been outlawed.
Every medication has a side effect. There's pretty much not one thing that doesn't have a side
effect. No, and if you listen to the commercials, they scare you off from. They cause diarrhea, heartburn, blindness. If all of a sudden you stop breathing, stop taking, and go to the nearest emergency room. You know, it's every one of those commercials.
Something that I talk about a lot with my friends. I'm pro doing things like getting work done, getting Botox, if that is going to make you feel confident in yourself and in your looks, absolutely more power to you. But something that I've been talking about with my friends who have either like younger siblings or are in some place of just like mentorship with girls in like middle school or elementary school is some of my friends have had work done and they've thought they're struggling a bit right now with this concept of how can I empower these young women to feel body confident and beautiful, and especially in such an awkward time in their lives, to feel this way about themselves while also getting work done and making that okay to also say, well, it's okay to do this because this is what's going to make me feel confident.
I don't like Gabby asking the questions. These are not softballs.
I don't like a softball.
That's a really tough question. I don't even know that I have a good answer for it. I mean, because it really is a struggle, because if you've got young kids, you want to teach them, especially young girls, that they're beautiful, that they don't need it, that they, you know, God made you the way you are and you're beautiful that way. And I think that's how you raise them. The work that I get done is not to change necessarily how I look. It is a little bit. I mean, yeah, it is. But it's more like to slow down the aging process so that I'm never going to be 21 again, right? Like, I'm never going to look like that again. But I'm not ready for like the saggy chin. And so I'm not trying to change fundamentally who I am. I'm just trying to look fresh. That's probably how I would spin it. Because for me, it's really, I'm just trying to slow down the aging process. Just a wee bit. I don't want to change fundamentally who I am. But when you were younger, in 18, 19, 20, you had fuller lips. And everyone knows as you get older, that upper lip slowly starts disappearing. I'm not ready for that yet. No. Do I want duck lips? No. But do I want my lips kind of like I was when I was a little bit younger? Yeah. So I think for me, it's a balancing act. It's a balancing act of teaching them that they're beautiful where they are. And as they get older and have time to reflect and grow and decide what they want to do, that it's okay to do some things.
Michelle, you grew up in an era where there was kind of a limited pool of exposure on anti-aging. You had TV, you had magazines. The internet was barely sort of ebbing and flowing. I'm talking about your early life. A lot of times that was sort of regulated based on the class system, right? If you had money, you could get a facelift. If you had money, you could get cosmetic procedures, right? The era was, if you could afford these things, you had money, you had wealth, you had power. They were limited. Now, you can basically book appointments off your app and have somebody come to your house, or they have these Botox parties or things like that. Like, all these things were basically unavailable to most people if you look back through history.
And I want to say that the beauty standard of itself is a moving target, like through the generations. And just if you look even just 100 years at a time, 50 years at a time, what is defined as beautiful completely changes all the time. Like Marilyn Monroe, in her heyday, would probably not, like if she came up in her beauty as she is in this era, would not be given a second glimpse. I really don't think she would have been.
Now she was too curvy back then. She's too curvy.
Yeah, she was too curvy. As an actress, she was like an amazing actress, and she had this certain like je ne sais quoi, or, you know, but her actual looks, like she wouldn't have been what they call like a sex icon nowadays. Nope. When it keeps going back, like having more weight used to be a sign of being wealthy and being well fed. And that was very attractive. People married more for those reasons versus like people who were really tan. Everybody wants to be tan now. You didn't want to be tan back then.
That tanning that salons in their heyday.
Yes.
Childbearing hips were a big thing back in the Middle Ages, by the way.
Yes. It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. So it's so different.
All I can think of is let them eat cake. Like, that's all I can get in my head.
No.
Cake. Let them eat cake.
We're not in that era anymore. So when it comes to social media, you see a lot of people gravitating towards trends. Whereas there was a life cycle of a trend, what you should look like, what your waist size should be, all these sort of criteria for what beauty is. Now it's exploded because it is about embracing who you are, but with a little fine tuning. Filters, amazing tools. How does that differentiate between both of you? Because Gabby, you're coming at this from a different perspective where you have been exposed to so many different ways that you can beautify yourself, that you can embrace who you are. But at the same point, there's a lot of criticism because as many people who want to jump into the positive pool, there's so many negative people that want to tear you down as well.
That's such a good question, Jake. I can't speak to what it would have been like to grow up without like immediate access to all of these impossible to achieve models of what you should look like. I mean, I remember being in middle school and we were all so obsessed with the Victoria's Secret angels and like the fashion show. And I remember reading a book, I think it's called like Not Your Angel or something. And it was written by a former Victoria's Secret angel. And she was talking about how when they did this big competition every year where they would actually have to compete, and it would be like hundreds of models would apply to do this thing. And then they would have to go through this like series of like a boot camp and all this stuff. And she would like be starving herself and just be going through the worst kinds of things. And I'm not saying that this is what models do now or saying that this is like the standard now for VS either. But she talked about the first time she ever got the cover of like a big magazine, she looked at herself and she went, I don't even look like myself. Like they had edited her to high heaven. And she just thought, I can't continue to like push this train along and tell women, I can't even reach the own example that I've set. I don't even look like me. And so there is this big movement. I mean, I look at like the Dove Beauty campaign. I feel like that one was, there was many before that, but that was one that caught so many people's attention and started making this like transition. There was plus size models, like Ashley Graham spearheaded that whole movement. I think, in my opinion, she did. And she's incredible. I think that you have to do like your affirmations. I'm not even kidding. Like look in the mirror and just be like, I am beautiful. And also put so much more of your worth in your, you can't put like your identity or your worth in how you look, because at the end of the day, all of that fades. And you almost have to call out the lies so specifically and like remind yourself like that is a lie. That's a lie. And I do not have to compete with these people, and my worth and my value in my looks are not based off of what these people's opinions are. But it's hard. I, you know, every single day you have to rein yourself in and say, I'm not going to post this, or I'm not going to edit this photo. I'm just like, I want to be happy with how I look and who I am. And there's a certain sense of freedom and joy in sharing that and feeling confident and healthy.
Confidence will lead to beauty, because beauty is about confidence, right? Beauty and insecurity don't work really well together. And we all have our insecure moments and all this. I mean, you know this, Michelle, from everything, is there were a lot of moments, and if we can get personal here for a second, is that you hid behind things. You avoided things because you did not feel beautiful. You did not feel confident. You are now in an era where you are not only accepting yourself, but you're actually appreciating yourself and you're actually loving yourself. And that took a hell of a lot of time and work. At this stage in your life, you have really embraced your beauty.
Yes.
Okay. It's remarkable the kind of grace and style that you put out there now. And it's comfortable for you. It's almost like this was hiding for many years. Where has this Michelle been?
Yeah, that's a good question. This is probably the most confident I've ever been in my own skin, which is crazy that at now almost 49 years old, that like I'm okay. Like I don't look at others and go, oh, I wish I had that, or I wish I looked more like that. I'm really okay with who I am. No one is perfect. Even the supermodels that are on, you know, the stage and have their pictures taken, y'all, it's all airbrushed. And I think, Jake, you know, I talked about this before, and Gabby, we may have talked about it before, but for me, that's artwork. That's not the real world. That is a finished product that is designed for a particular purpose and an intended purpose. And it's just not real, but it's nice to look at. Like I just came out on in InStyle magazine online. And that for me was kind of like a lifelong goal. I remember being a kid, and it kind of goes back to what Gabby says. I was never taught to value anything about myself as it related to looks. It was exclusively brains. It was, you get the straight A's. I think I remember my father telling me that social life was a wasted time, wasted energy. Friends were wasted time, wasted energy. My mother, I wanted to be a cheerleader so badly. And I wanted to be popular. And my mother would never even let me try out for cheerleading. She's like, it's a useless endeavor. And so I never got to do that. And I always wanted, like my grandmother always called me Brooke Shields, and I always wanted to be a model of some sort. Like I really did, but I didn't fit the Kate Moss prototype that were the models when I was in high school. It was the waif look. And y'all, I've never been a waif in my life. My chest in and of itself would be prohibitive for me from being a model back in the 90s when it was that I wanted to do it. And then now, like I did that in style, and I'm just like, I did it. And I did it as me. Yeah, a little bit filler here, a little bit of light, a little bit airbrushing on the pictures. Yeah, I mean, there were some edits, but not overly edited. I'm like, it was me. And it was me in my own skin at my own age, embracing myself. And that was really empowering. It really was. Yeah. Owning who you are is, I wish more women would do it, because it, God, it feels good. And I hate to say it, but I'd gone back and thought about it. From November 2020 to March 2025. I was either preparing for, recovering from, or in another surgery, bottom line. And it was really humbling to be in a wheelchair for almost 3 months. And then to go back-to-back knee replacements. And I finally, because I remember right before one of my knee replacement, I was looking for a new place to live because I left my house. And I couldn't even go on the tours because it hurt so bad to walk. And after my surgeries, I was able to walk pain-free for the first time in probably a decade. And that gave me an effort attitude. I'm just going to go do it. Now it's, I mean, I'm still limited in some of the things I can do because, you know, if I injure my neck, I got a problem. But it really, for me, was I got to stop living on the sidelines and living life again. And I wasn't going to let this opportunity to do that go by me. And so now it's, and I hate the YOLO because it's not really YOLO. It really is. I want to be able to look back at my life, on my life journey at the very end and go, I fucking crushed it. I do. And with that, it's, I'm going to dive in. I'm going to put my neck out on the chopping block. I'm going to take the big swings. I'm going to swing for the fences. Because what other chance do you get? And no one's going to do it for you. So get out there and swing. Take that big swing. And you may be surprised. I know I've been. And I wouldn't change it for the world.
I'm also going to say, I'm going to 100% agree with you. And it has to feel so good to be on like the cover of a magazine and look at yourself and be like, you have to look at this young version of yourself and go, you almost wish you could call her up and be like, you won't even believe what's going to happen in a few years.
That was fantastic. And you actually, when you said put your neck on the chopping block, I thought of something I want to introduce here, which I've workshopped privately. No. We're going to do a segment called Hot Takes, High Stakes.
Oh, Lord.
Okay. Michelle, we're putting you in the hot seat.
Done, son.
I think so.
LFG.
Okay. Michelle, in the news recently, there's a story of a judge who has been accused of stalking someone. How would you like to weigh in on this?
I've heard the case. I've read a couple articles about it. She allegedly began the stalking in May of 2024, according to court documents. Her victim, an attorney, filed a temporary protective order on January 12th, which was granted on January 16th. The victim says they were stalked about 300 times since May of 2024. The judge allegedly admitted to the police that she was stalking the victim and was jealous of their relationship between the victim and their boyfriend. Court documents say the victim's boyfriend had an on-again, off-again relationship with Rob that ended in 2021. Oh, the documents allege that Rob was asked multiple times to stop, but did not, and that the victim's boyfriend spoke with Rob, and it's R-O-B-B, that's the judge, on the phone, asking her to stop. Rob allegedly stalked the victim at a rental house, the streets around the rental house, her Pilates class, and multiple restaurants. The victim said Rob made her feel terrorized, frightened, intimidated, harassed, and fearful for her safety. They invested almost $15,000 in security and alarm systems at the rental home and then a new home. They filed a police report in December of last year.
I think that because of her position of power, she should have known better.
Oh, okay? Absolutely.
This is not something that should have gone. It's inexcusable to me. And someone speaking to so many stalking survivors, but to that context, she understood that she had put herself in a position where she was engaged in criminal activity. That is a very challenging thing, I think, for most of us to understand in terms of like, well, how could she do this? How could she risk her whole career to do this? Especially knowing better that she shouldn't have done this and shouldn't have perpetrated this. I think it's a very important thing to understand is that because I deal with stalking survivors all day, I have much less tolerance for leniency when it comes to stalking cases across the board. Because I think once you do it, you have the capacity to do it again.
Oh, she announced her retirement on January 22nd after a temporary protection order was granted against her. Yikes.
by her resigning, leaving her position, what does that tell you?
It tells me that so she retired, which means she'd serve for a very long time to be eligible to retire. And that to me is her acknowledging she did wrong and saying it's time to step aside. I mean, that's definitely an acknowledgement of it got away from me. I mean, and I think the numbers were like she'd either contacted or driven by this attorney's house like 300 times. What was the? I remember when I read it, I was like, holy cow.
She should have known better.
Yeah.
Okay. This is, I have no way to say this other than she should have known better. There's no reason whatsoever from this capacity. And also, this is the thing I want to mention too. When you engage in this kind of criminal behavior, you really do have to look back not only at her legacy, but also some of the decisions she's made.
That, okay. They are.
You really have to do that, especially when it comes to survivors. What kind of protection, you know what I'm saying? If she's going to be lenient on herself and she's going to engage in this behavior, what kind of decisions has she made when it comes to other people dealing with stalking scenarios? If she sympathizes.
One of the things you and I talked about is you don't excuse the behavior, right? But it's the mental health condition. This judge appears to be about the age because she's been serving now since 2006 on the bench. She was appointed in 2006. So she's been on the bench for almost 20 years. And so she's at the age where our hormones as women begin to really change. And there are, if you look into some of the studies, like there are some women that go crazy during the change of life. Like it's a legit thing. Like it really is. And so while you don't excuse the behavior, it's like, is this a hormone thing or is she really this crazy or is there some mental health issue? I mean, usually we're stalking, especially if someone says stop stalking when you keep doing it, you got a problem. But I'm not excusing the behavior, but Lord have mercy. And then she admitted to police, allegedly. I mean, that's what she's announced her retirement after she allegedly told the police.
Here's what this echoes for me. If you know the case, and I'm sure you do, the assassination of Harvey Milk and George Moscone in 1978 in San Francisco, where Dan White, city supervisor, came in and executed both of these men, basically disgruntled that he lost his job. The lawyer used the defense where Dan White's diet was so poor and he was eating Twinkies and junk food that it led to him going down a path to basically be able to lose himself and commit these murders. And it's now well known as the Twinkie defense. He got a very light sentence for this. He was out within a couple years, ended up committing suicide later. But the reason I'm saying this, is that you look to this position and you say to yourself, the behavior is one thing, but we do have to draw the line on where somebody's having a bad day, they're depressed, they lost their job or whatever. Does that give them excuse to commit crimes? You as a judge know this. There's nuances in everything. What we're getting from the report you just read, we're not seeing the whole picture. Mm-mm. We're seeing sound bites. We're seeing bits and pieces.
Two cents to throw in. Here's why. As being my ex-husband being a prosecutor, I can't tell you how many women got off either or with minimal sentences for killing their children because of the postpartum depression defense. We had a case, Norma Bustillos, left her child out on a levee, newborn, died from exposure. And she did it, like that wasn't even a question. And because her sentence was under 10 years, I think the jury sentenced her to 6 years. I forget, I'd have to ask Rick. But it was a postpartum defense, as opposed to she just left her kid out there and killed her. Well, understand I am not excusing the behavior, but they use that kind of defense all the time.
There are nuances to every case. And as I mentioned before, we're only getting a snapshot.
I'll tell you, when you say like the postpartum defense, I go, I know many of my friends who've had babies and suffered from postpartum depression and have managed not to kill their children. And they were like hospitalized due to how deep their depression was. And they still didn't do that. So you have to go, what other level? You know, I still just go, that's just so evil. And that's just so evil. So
funny
it's hard
story.
To, but people will
about that case, Norma Bustillo's back, and I don't know if you can still do this, but back then, if your sentence to prison was under 10 years, you could get an appeal bond. She got an appeal bond and skipped out on her bond, and they couldn't find her. There was a liquor store / steakhouse package store down the street from my house. And in Texas, you can't buy liquor on Sundays. So we would go to, it was Billy Cruz package store in New Mexico, which was 2 minutes from my house. And this woman was working the cashier. And Rick went up to her. He's like, "Do I know you?" And she's like, no. Rick's like, "Are you sure I don't know you? Like, you look really familiar. Have you been on one of my juries or jurors? Or you've been a juror in one of my cases?" I was like, "I'm a prosecutor in El Paso. Are you sure? Like, you look really familiar." "Nope, don't know you. Don't know you. Never seen you." And Rick's like, "Okay, well, that's, you just look really familiar." It was fucking Norma Bustillos. And so the prosecutor that put her away is the prosecutor that busted her when she skipped out on her bail. Coming up on the next Love Lust Law, wait, hold on to your seats. We've got a case involving a judge and an attorney and a protective order. And as someone that used to be on the other side of that bench, boy, I've got some insight for you all on this case. Thank you for tuning in to this week's Love Lust Law. It was real, it was fun, and it was real fun. Jake joined us. My executive producer, as always, tried to rein me in. Gabby did a better job. Thank you all for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed. Tune in to our next episode. Subscribe and listen. Thank you.
Perfection. I'm going to stop that.
We've come a long way.
We have. Yeah. Oh, my God. Have we ever? We all have.